Welcome to the Woodridge Baptist Church podcast. For more information about what's happening in the life of our church, visit our website at www.woodridge.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Y'all doing well today? And did you have a good week? Thankfully, you wake up today and it was a little bit cooler. It's January, it's 80, and I'm like, sure, why not? And then, of course, you wake up today and it's not 80, and I'm like, sure, why not? And probably in a couple of days, I haven't looked yet, but is it going to be 80? Probably so. I haven't looked, but I'm taking a guess. So we've been taking a look at the life of Solomon, and I was trying to lay a little bit of background into the person in Scripture that I've always been the most fascinated with, Jesus aside, of course, right? And the reason is because when you think of Solomon, I think, you know, if I could have anything in the world, a life like his wouldn't look too bad. You know, your father is the king, and ultimately he becomes the heir to the throne, even though he's not even the oldest son. And so kind of the standard system got bucked a little bit. Solomon rises up, and he assumes a throne. A lot of us think, wow, that'd be pretty cool. Yeah, when you think about, well, what are you going to be? Well, I'm going to be the ruler of a country. And some of us might think that's really neat. Some of us might look at it and go, I don't know that I would want that responsibility. Especially when you look at Solomon, it's not just that he was supposed to be a political leader. He's supposed to be a spiritual leader as well, right? I mean, God is the one that's supposed to be really ultimately leading Israel, which means God is ultimately the one that's supposed to be leading Solomon so that Solomon can lead people to God. You remember the story, though. God tells Solomon that he can ask for anything, anything at all. And Solomon says he wants what? He wants wisdom. Now, for us, I think we would do well to wake up in the morning and say, Lord, for the day that you've given me, give me wisdom. And in large part because you have no idea what it is that's going to happen to you in that day. But we at least can wake up and start the day, maybe in the Word, and get our minds, so to speak, pumped a little bit with the way that God thinks about things. Lord, give me wisdom. He could have asked for a lot of stuff. He could have asked for wealth. But I was thinking about this week. If your dad is David and you're the king, Solomon's known what wealth has been, probably. I mean, David did expand the empire quite a bit. When you think about it. So he's known what it's been like to live in wealth. As the heir to the throne, he's probably also thinking, well, I'm going to have some of that anyway. But in spite of that, have you thought about this? If you could ask for anything as wisdom, what would have popped into your mind? Because I don't know that that's necessarily what would have automatically popped into mine, but it did pop in to his. And he asked for wisdom so that he could not just know God's will. For some of us, we want to know God's will, and then when God reveals it, you're like, well, I didn't want to know that, because what God reveals might buck up against the kinds of things that we want for our day-to-day life. I was thinking of a friend this week, and this goes some years past, but he's 52 years old. His son is graduating from high school. They only had one kid, and he comes, and he and his wife, and they meet with me, and they said, man, you know, we feel that the Lord is calling us to overseas missions. The reason this was interesting is because when you look at their station in life, they had a very successful business. Their son is going into college. You might need some cash flow, right? And he says this, it just seems an odd time that God would say, now is the time for you to go overseas, right? When frankly, I need the money from my business so that I can pay for what my kid is about to go do, right? Because college isn't free. What was it, do you think, that he and his wife were really looking for when they came to visit with me? They wanted to know what God's will was. They were looking for insight for life. Well, it's a proper thing to go to God for, because we know that for those that are humbly going before God, he's going to reveal his will to them. But when we find out what his will is, sometimes that's the point that we say, I'd rather not known. I'd rather not known. Now, you may be wondering whatever it was that happened to my friends, right? They sold their business. They did. They sold their business, and they went to Israel. And for those of you that were with me not too long ago in September, you go, wow, what a great place to be. Maybe when you're visiting and you're going to archaeological sites and so forth. But how about when you're going to be a missionary? It's a little bit of a different experience. What we see in 1 Kings as we look into the life of Solomon, and today I'm going to focus quite a bit on chapter 4, is that 1 Kings 4 shows us how wisdom actually plays out. It's one thing to have knowledge. Knowledge is one thing. Wisdom is the proper use of that knowledge. For parents, you've probably looked at your kids at times and said, you know better than this. Have you ever done that, parents? You watch them make a choice and you go, you know better. Well, knowledge is one thing. The proper use of that knowledge is wisdom. You're looking for them to take what they know and to put it into their feet. However, adults, are you really any different than the kids? Are you really? Are there times where kids, I want you all to just look at the adults right now, all right? Because here's the, and I'm up here as an adult, right? Everybody look around in judgment of each other right now, okay? Because here's why. Are we really any different? I mean, at the end of the day, the reason that adults don't listen is the same reason that kids don't listen. And it's because we don't want to. It's because what it is that we might hear is exactly what we don't want to hear. And what's worse is the change that God might be trying to bring in us is exactly the change that we don't want for ourselves. How does that make us any different from a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old or a 6-year-old? And the answer is, we're not. It's exactly the same. 1 Kings 4 shows us how wisdom plays out, and it shows that by living wisely, there are incredible practical benefits for your life. Let me give you an example. Solomon, you know, as he's assuming the throne, you think of the complexity of what that means. And one of the things we see in chapter 4, verses 2 through 5, Solomon knew that he needed other people to succeed. He knew that he needed other people to succeed. And I'm going to suggest this to you today. So do you. So do you. Look at verses 2. It says, and these were his officials, Azariah, son of Zadok, the priest. By the way, as I was reading this, I was like, this sounds like a Superman script a little bit, right? When you hear Jor-El. Well, Jor-El's not in here, right? But it sounds a lot like a Superman script. These were his officials, Azariah, the son of Zadok, who was what? A priest. If you look at others, he has, in verse 3, he has secretaries. He has a court historian. He has someone that's in charge of the army in verse 4. He has other priests as well. He has deputies. He even, if you look in verse 5, Zabud, son of Nathan, a priest and advisor to who? The king himself. Ahashar, in charge of the palace. And then you even have people in charge of forced labor, and that just doesn't sound good. But you have people that are in place. And one of the things that you see from Solomon is this, is that he knew that he had to get the right people on the bus to succeed. And he also, that means he has to get the wrong people off if he wanted to succeed. You get it? He knew that he could not succeed on his own. If you look in the Proverbs, you know, he's writing this to his son. I'm going to give you wisdom. I want to hand off something to you so that you know how to do life well. One of the things that he's constantly saying is, hey, be careful how you behave with women. And one of the reasons that he says that is because he wasn't very well behaved with women, right? And you get over to Proverbs 31, and Proverbs 31 is usually the Proverbs 31 woman, and women go to that often, but he was writing this to his son. Hey, boy, when you see this kind of woman, snatch her up because she will be a blessing for you. By the way, it does go the other way. Ladies, if you see that kind of man, he will be a blessing for you. There's a practical benefit in the way that you make decisions for your life. And right off the bat, Solomon says, I've got to get good and wise leaders around me to succeed. He may not have been the best military strategist in the world, and he may have known that about himself. Right? If you go back and if you look in, I love World War II. One of the things that was said about Hitler was, what would the effects have been? What would the difference have actually been for Hitler had he let his generals be the generals? That he inserted himself at times in some in crucial moments for the war. But frankly, I'm glad he did. I'm glad he did because he lost. Right? And I want him to lose. But this question has gone through historians over and over again. What if he had taken his hands off and just let his generals be the generals? Maybe Solomon looks at this and he knows, this is an area of strength I have. There are areas of weakness, and I need people of strength there. You, friends, you have areas of weakness in your life. There are ways, there are places that you might have incredible God-given wisdom. And then there are other places in your life that when you look at it, it's a blind spot. You just can't see stuff. Here's the good news. People that are outside of you, that love you, and that are godly, they can. They can. And the reason that we even start here in chapter 4, verses 2 to 5 is this, is because what this means for Solomon is that Solomon let them speak into his life. He let them speak into his life. He knew he needed other people to succeed. That's a practical benefit of wisdom. Here's a second one. He ruled over the largest territory in Israel's history. He ruled over the largest territory in Israel's history. But if you look, for example, at Ecclesiastes 2:9, it says, "So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem." Now, if Ecclesiastes wasn't written by Solomon, I still am of the ilk that thinks it was about him, right? And you see in chapter 2, verse 9, "I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Israel." And who would that mean? That would mean even his father, who had expanded the kingdom tremendously, he had surpassed even that. What's described is there was so much silver and gold at this time, it's like it would be on the sconces on your wall, that everywhere you looked, there was, so to speak, there was the kickback of being wise with the way that things were being led. And even in 1 Kings chapter 9, and I'm just going to speak this to you, but it says that he, Solomon, who's over this, he controlled Gezer, he controlled Megiddo, and he controlled Hazor. Now you may think, that's interesting. Right? Because all of you are sitting there going, I have no idea what those places actually are. Well, the reason that those three places were important is these were the three major trade routes of that time. The three big ones were those. You want to do trade? Here's what this means. You got to go through him. He was smart. He was really good. If you want to do trade, I now control the three major trade routes. You're coming through, you've got to go through us. Which means what? His people now have jobs, that there's going to be wealth that's pouring into the country. The guy was on his game, right? He expanded, ruled over the largest territory in Israel's history. But, and this is the third benefit, he ruled with great insight. With great insight. Do you remember 1 Kings chapter 3? "I'll give you anything God says," Solomon says, "give me wisdom." And it was put to the test pretty quickly. Because you had two women that come to Solomon, and there's a child. Both of them are claiming rights to the child. Well, it can't be both of them, right? And so what does Solomon do? Solomon says, "Get me the sword. Just get me a sword, and I'm going to cut the child in half, and you can both have the child." Now, was he really going to kill the child, everybody? No. The answer is no. What a bunch of losers to the left. Read your Bibles. No. What was he trying to discover? The real mother will step up and say, "I would rather lose the right of taking care of the kid, but the kid live." That is practical wisdom. For some of us, we need practical wisdom in other ways because you don't have two women walking up to you and saying, "Here's a child," and we're both laying claim to it, right? Maybe that's not it. But as he was ruling with great insight, you need great insight as well. There was a piece of wisdom that was given to me by a professor that I'm going to share with you. When I began studying with him, he had two PhDs, two. He had been teaching for over 50 years. He was 81 years old. And I remember sitting in his office. And there was this moment, you know, where I said, you know, what would you consider to be, you know, one of the greatest lessons that you've just learned for life, just practically speaking? What would you say is one of the greatest lessons you've learned for your life? And he thought for a second, and he said, "Well, I think that the key to the blessings of my life," and God has so richly blessed me, he said, "but I think the key to it is that I made decisions long before I got myself into situations. I made decisions long before I got myself into situations." Now, to be honest with you, I didn't know what he meant. So tell me what that means. He said, "What that means is this, is that I had made the decision on who I was going to be, and by that meant I never got into certain situations." If I, he's because here's what I knew. If I place myself into situations, they're just, I'm ripe for the picking. But if I'm never there, if I never really put myself into a place where I can fail, and he means morally, if I'm never in the place where I can fail, I won't. Friends, that's just wisdom. It is just wisdom. You know, because some of us are sitting there going, how did my life get to this place? And then you kind of stop mentally and you look at all of the decisions that you made where you put yourself in the place where you could fail. And you've got your answer. A lot of times it's just the small steps that lead to the big one. And we lacked practical wisdom for daily life. See, Solomon judged with great insight. You also, even though you're not a king of anything to my knowledge, all of you are, so to speak, over the decisions that you make in the day-to-day for yourself. And you need wisdom just like he did. Here's another practical result of his wisdom. He's the guy that ends up building the temple. He builds the temple. For the people of God, that was a big, big deal because they were longing for this. The place that we go to experience God. They had longed for this. Solomon, not David. David, because of what he does with Bathsheba, God says, you're not fit. You're not fit. That tells us something. But Solomon is. He rises up and he builds this temple. Did a little bit of research because I wonder what it would have cost to actually build that thing. How much would the temple have actually cost? And then adjust it for inflation for today because, you know, we do that, right? Well, the low estimates indicate that he probably would have spent somewhere to the tune of about $150 billion on the temple. Hold on. $150 billion on the temple. That's the low estimate. Some would say that it's over $215 billion. When you look at the wood that was brought in, the gold, the silver, the decoration, and everything, he builds that temple. That temple ultimately, by the way, is destroyed. Now imagine being the people that are there and this awesome place is built and then you have someone come in and destroy it. Well, later it does get rebuilt. But to tell you how incredible the temple of Solomon was, what they rebuilt was described as amazing, but even the people of God grieved at how pitiful it was compared to what Solomon had built. The second temple, amazing. But nothing like what this guy did. He could pull off some feats. But more than that, he blessed the nation with prosperity. And here's what I don't mean by that. I don't mean that he just blessed the government leaders with prosperity. You could probably look in history at some places where the people are struggling just to eat, but you've got those in leadership that are leading lives of opulence. I mean, we've got a few examples of that, right? That wasn't him. Instead, you look, and the people of the nation were blessed with financial prosperity. And you see this from chapter 4, verse 25. It's kind of a cryptic line, but it's what it's saying. It says, every person lived under his own vine and his own fig tree. Every person lived under his own vine and under his own fig tree. What does that even mean? It means that they all had a place where their needs were being met. That's what it means. And all of this because Solomon, leading with wisdom, blessed his people. There's some other things that we know about this guy. For example, he was an author. Because of his wisdom, he had something to say. And that's the next benefit of wisdom. You actually have something to say. Now, there are some people that have no wisdom whatsoever, and it doesn't keep them from talking. You know what I mean? But Solomon had wisdom, and he shared it. If you think about it, he was the author of over 1,000 songs. Over 1,000 songs. He's the guy that's writing the Song of Solomon, wisdom on what marriage looks like. How do you fight well in a marriage? You know, how do you do conflict resolution? He's sharing all of this stuff. And many of this stuff is not just included in, for example, the Song of Solomon, but also in the Psalms. Think of the enduring impact that this guy has had in the fact that thousands of years later, we're still talking about what he was writing and what he was saying. Wisdom. It's timeless. So how impressive was Solomon At this point, you probably have to be thinking, man, this guy is impressive, really impressive. He was so impressive that if you look at chapter 10, there's a lady named the Queen of Sheba. Ever heard of her? The Queen of Sheba has to come and see if everything that she's heard about him is true. And she wants to put him to the test. And what you see in chapter 10 is her conclusion about her experience by meeting Solomon. And it says this in verse 4. It says, when the Queen of Sheba observed all of Solomon's wisdom, the palace he had built, the food at his table, his servants' residence, his attendants' service and their attire, his cupbearers, and the burnt offerings he offered at the Lord's temple, it took her breath away. And she said to the king, the report I heard in my own country, so it wasn't just his own people that were taking note. Everybody is like, this guy is special. He's special. The report I heard in my own country about your words and about your wisdom is true. But I didn't believe the reports until I came and I saw with my own eyes. Indeed, I wasn't even told half. Your wisdom and prosperity far exceed the report that I heard. How happy are your men? How happy are these servants of yours who always stand in your presence, hearing your wisdom? Hearing your wisdom. They knew that he was worth listening to. And not just listening to, he was worth following. That's Solomon. This has started well for this guy, hasn't it? Hold on, because there will be a turn. But why does all of this matter? And the reason that all of this matters is as you go back when Solomon says, God says, I'll give you anything. Solomon says, give me wisdom. God gave it. The reason I even share all of this is because what this means is that it shows you that God is faithful to his promise. He's faithful. Solomon asked, God gave. And so here's just a couple of points of application I want you to take home with you this morning. And here's the first. We learn from Solomon this, that having wisdom has as much to do with the heart as it does the head. Having wisdom has as much to do with the heart as it does with the head. If you look at Proverbs chapter 15, verse 12, it says, conceited people do not like to be corrected. They never ask for advice from those who are wiser. You know why? It's because nobody's wiser. Nobody's wiser than them, right? Nobody really knows how to do life better than them, right? Nobody knows how to do marriage better than them, right? Nobody knows how to raise children better than them. Nobody knows how to do business better than them. And they're not listening. They're not listening. Conceited people do not like to be corrected. They don't like to see themselves as ever wrong. They always have this line of justifying what it is that they're doing. And so they walk away and they just feel good with it, even though everything in their path is burning to the ground. Nobody's wiser than me. Here's the question. Simple question for you. How do you handle correction or feedback? How do you handle correction or feedback? Are you teachable? Are you teachable? When you're afraid to show that you don't know how to do something or how to answer a question, it may be a signal that you're not teachable. Did you hear that? Let me share it again. When you're afraid to show that you don't know how to do something or how to answer a question, it may be a signal that you are not teachable. If you get defensive when somebody corrects you, and I don't mean somebody that's being difficult. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Somebody that is nitpicking you to death. I don't even mean that. They're coming to you with a word of correction for your blessing and for your good. They see the kinds of choices that you're making, and they're concerned for you because they love you, and so they want to speak some truth into your life and say, this is not going to take you where you think. Question, do you get defensive when somebody corrects you? If so, it may be a sign, friends, that you're not teachable, and it would be same for me. And even what you see later in Scripture, when it talks about wisdom in the book of James, it describes wisdom this way. And let's see if this describes you. Wisdom from above is first pure. It's from above. There's more than one kind of wisdom. Solomon would even say there's godly wisdom, but there's earthly wisdom. It's pure. It's peace-loving. It's gentle. It's compliant. It's full of mercy and good fruits. It's unwavering. It's without pretense. There's no bull. You're not worried about making sure that you've got this appearance with people. You're going to be real. I have a simple rule that I try to live by. I'm not going to walk around and try to give people appearances of me. You know why? Because ain't nobody got time for that. That's why. And I don't mean just you. I mean me. I don't have enough time in my God-given life to have multiple identities that I have to manage. The one that I've got is enough. It's enough. And so I just try to be with the Lord and say, hey, show my real stuff. And for the part of me that isn't right, let's get on with it. Let's move on. But I'm not worried about the pretense. And I can't be. What I would hope as I commit to that is that the Lord would honor that and say, Jeremy, be without pretense. And he will speak to me. So if somebody makes a suggestion, we take it as a personal criticism. We get defensive. But a wise person, it says, can learn from anybody. From anybody. Wise people are not defensive. They're not stubborn. They're open to reason. They're willing to listen. They're willing to learn. James 3:17 describes wisdom as submissive. You're willing to put yourself under somebody for your good and for your blessing. But what the word really means is reasonable, willing to listen, open to ideas and suggestions. One translation even says it this way. It, that is wisdom, it allows discussion. It allows discussion, even in your marriage. Sometimes, wives, did you know that you have to say some difficult things to your husbands? Husbands, did you know in your marriage that sometimes you have to say difficult things to your wives? You know why? Because neither of us are perfect, are we? And you speak those truths for their good and for their blessing and because you love them, not because you're trying to rip them down. Or we can have this caution. In Proverbs 12:15, it says, a fool thinks he needs no advice, but a wise man will listen to others. A fool thinks he needs no advice, but a wise man will listen to others. Second thing is this. Having wisdom is a constant pursuit. You are never done, friends. You are never done. And it requires us to be in the presence of the wise to gain it and stay in the presence of the wise to continue growing. You go to the wise to gain it. You stay with the wise to keep it. Staying connected to the source. Stay connected to the source. This was the great caution in any Star Wars fans out there. Do you remember when Luke is at the Dagobah system? I'm going back to the old school Star Wars here, people. Luke is at the Dagobah system. He's learning from Master Yoda, right? And he's sitting there going, my friends are in danger. I have to go. And what does Yoda say? Come on, everybody. What does Yoda say? Don't go. All right, that's it. I would have done it better, but I'm a little hoarse today, right? Actually, he would have said something like this, go not, all right? What is he telling Luke? You're not ready for this. You are not ready for this. Was Yoda right, everybody? Yes, because Luke goes up half-trained, and there's Darth Vader with his asthma. I'm asthmatic, so I can do that, right? There he is, breathing heavily and so forth. Luke isn't ready. Next thing you know, he doesn't have an arm. Yoda was looking at him and saying, your friends will be okay. You need to listen to me. Listen to me. And he didn't. That's the point. Having wisdom is a constant pursuit. You go to the wise, you stay with the wise. Luke wasn't going to stay or even listen to the wise. It's one thing to have wisdom, it's another thing to keep it and to grow in it. Proverbs 9:10 says this, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. It's understanding. Martin Luther really struggled with this because he's talking about the fear of the Lord, and fear just doesn't sound good. You know, imagine my girls coming home, you know, to the house, and you say, when you think of your dad, what's the first word that comes to your head? And they go, fear. Most of you would be like, what's going on in that house? Right? I mean, what is going on in that house? So here's what Martin Luther said. He distinguished what he called servile fear and filial fear. Test on that next week. The servile fear is a kind of fear that a prisoner in a torture chamber has for his tormentor or the jailer or even the executioner. It's that kind of anxiety in which someone is frightened by the present danger that is represented by somebody else. Or it's the kind of fear that a slave would have at the hands of a hateful master who would come with a whip and torment the slave. Servile fear, Martin Luther said, refers to a posture of servitude toward a malevolent, you need to be thinking evil, owner. That's one kind of fear. That's one. However, he said filial fear, and he makes a distinction. This draws from the Latin idea from which we get the idea of our family. It refers to the fear that a child has for their father. And in this regard, Luther is thinking of a child who has tremendous respect and love for his father or mother and who wants to please them. And that's the part you have to underline. They love them. And because they love them, they want to please them. Like my four girls, every day, all the time, nonstop. He has a fear or an anxiety of offending the one that he loves. Luther says, here's the catch. Not because he's afraid of torture or even punishment, but here's the key. But rather because he's afraid of displeasing the one who is, in that child's world, the very source of security and love itself. That's it. So it's going to the source of wisdom and staying with the source of wisdom. Never being like Luke Skywalker and going, yeah, I've got enough, and so off we go. Because that's when you get your arm chopped off. That's when it happens. You hear the wheezy person walk, and you weren't ready. And here's the thing, you get took. You get took. And whose fault was it? Yoda was saying, stay. You said, I'm good enough to go, and I don't need you anymore. Here's the way that I want to end today. Proverbs 9 gives us this contrast. Same Solomon trying to share some wisdom. And he gives an analogy. Solomon gives an analogy about Madam Folly and Lady Wisdom. Now, it's not real women. It's an analogy. If you look in Proverbs 9, verses 13 through 18, says the woman named Folly is brash. She's ignorant and she doesn't know it. She sits in her doorway on the heights overlooking the city. She calls out to men going by who are minding their own business. And she says, come in with me, she urges the simple. To those who lack good judgment, she says, stolen water is refreshing. Food eaten in secret tastes the best. And in verse 18, it says this, but little do they know that the dead are there. Her guests are in the depths of the grave. There are two women, and so there are two ways. Two women, and so two ways. J.D. Greer shared this. I'm gonna share it with you because I thought it was really good. He says, notice this. Both women are at the same location. They're at the highest point of the city, calling out to people as they pass by. Both have prepared their houses for guests, and both especially appeal to the young. Both are saying that they will fill your life up. But you know what? We can be filled up with a lot of things. Let's think about Mexican food for a second. Do you want ponchos or do you want papasitas? Do you want ponchos or papasitas? Thank you. You want papasitas. Let's don't kid ourselves, right? Oh, we're wrong. Ponchos is going to fill you up. But man, it's not worth it. It isn't worth it. Two women are crying out, and both are saying they're going to fill your life up. And here's the thing. Most of us are settling for ponchos. By the way, if you own a ponchos out there, I'm sorry. This is just all I could come up with today. But whereas wisdom calls out for those who are humble and fear God, folly appeals to those who want immediate satisfaction. I just want you satisfied right now. Right now. Notice what they said. Wisdom says, whoever is inexperienced, enter here. To the one who lacks sense, she says, come eat my bread and drink the wine that I have mixed. Folly says this, to the one who lacks sense, she says, stolen water, it's not even yours. Stolen water is sweet and bread eaten in secrecy is tasty. I'm here and I'm really going to destroy you. I just don't want you to know that. I don't want you to know that. Friends, there are two women, there are two ways, but there are two destinations. There are two destinations. This is what I want you to hear, and this is how I close. For some of you, and I think this is exactly right, you need to ask, what path am I on? There is a destination there, and it might not fit with your intention, right? You know, my intention is I just want to have this good and full and meaningful life. I don't blame you. I'm in the same boat. I want the same thing. I want a great marriage. I want to have great kids. I want to have great friends. I want to make an impact. I want people to be blessed. I only have so many days, you know? So I want people to be blessed. But there are two women, there are two ways, but there are two destinations. Notice what Scripture is saying and the caution that Solomon is trying to give. Don't fool yourself. Don't fool yourself. One way will lead to blessing, and the other way is going to lead to destruction. Question this morning, my friends, what path are you on? What path are you on? We have to have this time where, just like with James before, it says wisdom is without pretense. Stop the game. Let's get real. What path are you on? Here's what I know, and I'm not saying this in a mean way. I'm saying this, and I hope that it reaches you because I've prayed for you this week. But some of you are on a path. You're making decisions that aren't just hurting you. It's hurting your family. You're killing your family. You are. You're making decisions that are killing your marriage, killing your children, killing your friendships. And here's what Jesus is trying to tell you through Solomon today. There are two paths. There are two destinations. Good news. You still have choices to make today. Today. I am less worried right now about the path you have chosen. I'm worried right now about what it's going to look like from here that way. That way. What is it going to be? Jesus says he's the way, he is the truth, he is the life. He's it. And what he wants is for you to have that. That's the choice that I invite you to make today.
We hope you have enjoyed the podcast. For more information about our church, visit www.woodridge.org.